Now, in the dead of the night, what do? We look at stars. Alan Gilmore is a national astronomer, a New Zealand astronomer, and a discoverer of minor planets and other objects in the sky, and joins me. Kia ora, Alan. How are you and Pam, and have there been any new star discoveries recently?
Kia ora. Well, actually, we're somewhat disadvantaged. We had an 18-night allocation on Mount John, University of Canterbury's 1-metre telescope starting last Friday, and we were opening the dome when there was a major failure of the driving mechanism that opens the dome. It's worked flawlessly for the last 37 years, and so we haven't been actually able to do anything with the big telescope on Mount John, and it's probably going to be out of action for a month or two, unfortunately. We do have a smaller telescope at home for tracking the brighter asteroids and so on, but we're somewhat disadvantaged currently.
Do you need to send that overseas to get fixed, that telescope?
Oh, no. No. The driving mechanism is a fairly basic sort of, imagine a bicycle chain sort of, two bicycle chains sort of going up the side of the dome and, and kind of sprocket wheels engaging with those chains. They're very large chains. And what's happened is the sprocket wheel system has failed. Bits of it have broken. And we've just got to get new sprockets made. I understand there's a company in the North Island that can do that. But the difficulty is we have to take the whole shutter system, which is a very large curved door, has to be lifted right off the dome and put on the ground, and then lots of work done to replace the broken mechanism. So that's why it's going to take quite a while.
Now, you want to get it fixed by May the 16th, do you? I believe next month, May the 16th, there's something very special happening in the sky we should look out for.
Well, we wouldn't observe that with the 1-metre telescope, but it's a great thing to look out for. There's an eclipse of the moon. A total eclipse of the moon occurs on May the 16th, but it isn't total from New Zealand, because by the time the moon comes up, it is already, I should explain, a total eclipse of the moon happens when the moon goes right through the Earth's shadow, and it takes an hour or a bit more, depends on how much of the shadow it goes through, to happen. But unfortunately, it mostly has happened by the time the moon rises in New Zealand. So what we will see from New Zealand is what should be a full moon coming up half covered in shadow. So the moon comes up at just about at sunset, because a full moon is exactly opposite the sun, or nearly exactly.
Yeah.
So wherever you are, as the sun is going down, if you've got a sea horizon, then when the sun is going down in the west or the northwest, the full moon should be coming up in the southeast. Well, it won't look quite right when it comes up on Monday, May the 16th. It'll still be half in shadow, and it's moving out of the shadow. So by about 5 to 6, it'll be fully out of the dark part of the shadow, but it will still have the sort of shadow edge on it, so that it'll look a little odd in its sort of brightness for another hour or so after that.
And remind me, how often does this happen?
Roughly once or twice a year. It's when the moon's orbit is kind of tilted to the Earth's orbit, so there's two times in a year when the moon's shadow can cross over the Earth, or around the other side, the moon can go into the Earth's shadow. So you either get a solar eclipse where the moon's shadow tracks across the Earth, or you get a lunar eclipse. Usually, if you get all of one, you only get part of partial eclipse of the other one is a partial eclipse. So twice a year you can have a lunar eclipse, but that doesn't happen necessarily every year.
Yeah, of course. Now, Alan, I live in central Auckland these days, and I always love looking to the stars, and I think I see a lot of stars, but I really don't. And the reason why I know I don't is I went away to Gisborne, north of Gisborne, a couple of weeks ago on holiday, and the stars were just incredible. It's just amazing what you can see on a beautiful, beautiful night out of a city centre. Where's the best place in New Zealand for you to watch stars?
Oh, anywhere that's dark. Where you were out in the country, north of Gisborne, but anywhere out of town. Obviously, if you've got a clear sky, that's another thing. The Mackenzie country is favoured, that's why Mount John is here, because it's not just the skies are dark, but we get a lot of clear skies. We're in a kind of mountain basin. We've got high mountains, obviously, in the west, the range that includes Mount Cook. But we've also got quite a lot of high mountains in the east, or what's called the Two Thumb Range. And those keep the coastal cloud out, by and large. Not always, of course. But about half of our nights are clear here, or usable, because of those mountains. Whereas most other parts of the country, you'll get coastal cloud coming in and obscuring things. But yeah, if you want to look at the stars, anywhere out of town, really, is good enough. You just need a dark sky, which is what you had. Yep.
And this may be a very silly question, but is there a certain time of night that is the best time to see stars?
Oh, yeah, the moon phase is important. A lot of people kind of get the idea that, I will visit Tekapo when it's full moon, because that'll be best. That's the worst time. You really want no moon or very little moon in the sky if you want to see the stars. So have a look at the calendar and choose a time when it's around new moon, or at least not more than a first quarter moon, because then the sky will be dark. If you go out into the country at full moon, you'll have a sky that's just about as bright as your suburban sky.
Of course. So
it's, you don't see the faint stars, you don't see the Milky Way. The other thing we have in the south is the Clouds of Magellan, which are two nearby galaxies, and they look like misty glows in the south part of the sky. They're called clouds, and that's exactly what they look like, but they're actually nearby galaxies, small galaxies, quite close to us, as galaxies go. And you see those on a dark night, but you won't see that sort of thing, the Milky Way and the Clouds of Magellan, if you've got a bright moon in the sky.
Of course, of course. One of the things that really stood out to me as well was not obvious, but the different shimmering colours, or the I think they're planets, and I wanted you to tell me. I think you've got a little bit of a story about bright planets in the morning sky, but there were definitely some stars that just shone a little bit more orange, and I wondered if they were planets.
No, not in the evening sky, not just now. The orange stars, there's a very bright one, well, a bright one, not very bright, in the north. That's called Arcturus. And it's just about the brightest orange-coloured star in the sky. And often, because it's just orange, when it twinkles, the air breaks up. Warm and cold currents in the air break the light up. So white stars twinkle all colours like a diamond, whereas an orange star doesn't have any blue light. And so Arcturus, when it's low in the sky, often twinkles red and green. We quite often used, when we were on Mount John, used to get calls from public saying, there's something in the sky that's flashing red and green. And it would always be Arcturus, very low, either rising in the northeast or setting in the northwest. Yes. So yeah, orange stars are cooler stars. There's another one, Antares in the Scorpion. Antares is quite high in the eastern sky now, it's sort of the body of the Scorpion, and that's also an orange-coloured star. So they're giant stars. They're much bigger than the Sun, but they're much cooler than the Sun, and that's why they've got the orange colour to them.
So fascinating. Alan, Pete's just sent in a message, and he said, can we see the giant asteroid passing Earth? Meteors fell over England, France last week, and there's another meteor shower next week. Does this make any sense to you, this text that I've just read out?
Well, meteor showers are not related generally to giant asteroids, and I don't know of any giant asteroid passing. Sometimes the news media gets a little overboard with passing asteroids. They talk about a big asteroid. They usually mean a big asteroid compared to the ones that commonly pass us by. The really big ones, 1,000 kilometres across, stay nice and safe between Mars and Jupiter and the asteroid belt. There are asteroids passing us all the time, and the program, small asteroids, the program that Pam and I run on Mount John is involved with following up discoveries or reobserving asteroids that have been discovered in previous years that are coming close again. We can only see them when they're close because they're quite faint objects. Meteor showers, on the other hand, are when we go through or near the orbit of a comet. Comets are made of generally quite fragile stuff. And when they're close to the Sun, there's lots of gas fizzing out from them, from stuff that's evaporating. And that carries off dust. Some of the dust is quite fine, but some of it is sort of little fluff balls of dust. And they stay roughly in the orbit of the comet. So when we pass, when the Earth passes near the orbit of the comet, then you've got these dust particles and fluff balls coming into the atmosphere, and that produces a meteor shower. There are several dozen that are known, but there's we don't have any really good ones in the southern hemisphere. In the northern hemisphere, they have I think about three that are really where you might see 100 meteors in an hour, for instance, which is really quite spectacular.
Oh my gosh, then, I imagine. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't. The nearest we've seen is there's one shower called the Geminid shower. That occurs around November the 15th, I think, from memory. The Leonid shower. And they're named after the constellation that meteors appear to radiate from. The meteors are all coming into the sky, into the air, in parallel paths. But from the ground, it's that sort of perspective, that railway track effect. They seem to radiate from one place in the sky, and so they get named. The showers get named after the constellation that they appear to radiate from. And every 33 years or so, the comet that produces the Leonid meteors comes past the sun. And there's a lot of dust in around that part of its trail. So when we go through its path, we get a lot more meteors. And if you're lucky and in the right place in the northern hemisphere, you might see literally thousands of meteors in an hour. The sky is just raining meteors, which would be really spectacular. Well, in 1999, we got up early in the morning because that sort of shower was going to be on, but the radiant is very low from New Zealand, and so we didn't expect to see very many. But we saw, I think in the space of about an hour, we saw about 25 meteors. Now, because of our location, they were going right from one side of the sky to the other, which was really quite spectacular. That's the best we've seen.
Ah, what? That would have just been amazing. When you explain meteors like that, it really takes me to the movies or something. It would be crazy to imagine it in the sky. One thing I did see in the sky recently, and you may have spoken to Brian Crump about this before, but it was a line of stars. It was, you know, someone told me what it was. That, you know, the man who's just bought Twitter and Tesla. You know, do you know what I'm talking about? Did he?
Yeah.
Leon, you know, Musk. Was he doing something in the sky?
What you're seeing is the, I think they're called Starlink satellites.
Yes. They're
launched. Each rocket that goes up carries about 60 of them, and they're all sort of launched together. And at first, they're in quite a tight little group in a line, and then gradually they separate out. At first they're in quite a low orbit as well.
Yes, I think that's where I saw it. And they were so, it looked like stars, but they were so perfectly, measured out and then moved it just seemed so strange. I hadn't heard about it before.
Yeah, we've counted, I think the most we've ever counted in one lot is about 29, but you could in principle see 60 of them going by if you were lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time. After they've tested them all out, they deorbit, that is, they crash any that haven't survived launch if they find they're not working properly. And the others get, they've got little rockets of their own, and they shift into a somewhat higher orbit and they become a lot fainter. So you only see those lines when they've first gone up. Not just first gone up, but I guess they'd be up for, I'm not sure whether it's days or weeks, but they don't stay in those, they don't stay easily visible for very long.
Right. as an astronomer, Alan, are they annoying? Are they distracting, looking up into the sky thinking you see a star and, oh, no, it's just Elon Musk's thing going across?
Well, they're not when you're just casually looking at the sky, but astronomers are generally concerned because When you're working with a telescope, of course, it's seeing much fainter objects. And if you happen to get a line of these things crossing where you're imaging, you're taking pictures, then you can get a whole line of tracks across your pictures, and that can really ruin the science. So astronomers are very concerned, particularly with the proposal. I think Elon Musk wants to put up several thousand of these, something like 60,000 in total. And he's not the only one. There are two or three other companies that want to do similar things. And so astronomers really are very concerned about the total effect of this. It's not just the imaging people. The radio astronomers rely on being able to look at the sky and not have satellites going through their views. And
exactly.
And so they are also concerned. So astronomy, international astronomy generally, is very concerned. But there are other aspects as well. You've got the kind of pollution of the lower low-orbiting objects. And if you get too many of them up there, they start to bump into each other. And they're doing so at speed. And each collision generates a whole heap of shrapnel, which in turn can collide with other satellites. So there's a thing called the Kessler syndrome, which was first proposed or first predicted by an American astronomer, I can't remember his first name, Kessler, about 30 or more years ago. And the Kessler syndrome would be when you get a collision and then the debris from that collision causes other collisions, which in turn cause other collisions, and you get a sort of runaway effect where you end up with a whole lot of orbiting shrapnel wrecking satellites, and that's a real possibility.
That's very worrying. I'm so pleased I asked you about it, Alan. I thought I was kind of one of the rare people that didn't know about them. And when I saw it, I mean, if anyone's listening and they've seen what I'm talking about, let me know, because it really shocked me that and especially talking to you about it, that it might affect the system, the solar system. That is very worrying. Alan Gilmore, thank you so much for your time. You and your wife, Pam, are so knowledgeable. We really appreciate you and all the work that you do here in Aotearoa. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good.